Hi, Vince. It's an honor to be able to chat with you today. For those that are listening, my name is Kristen Okeson, and I'm the current general manager of WeBe 108. Today, I'm talking to Vince Cremona, the original general manager of WeBe 108, in celebration of the 40-year anniversary of WeBe. I thought it would be fun to chat with you today. So welcome and thank you for taking the time to talk. You're talking to me from Cape Cod, correct?
Absolutely correct, yep. I'm sitting here by the fire with a cigar and a scotch, and it's a beautiful day. Except it is a beautiful day, except I don't have a fireplace and I don't have any scotch. But other than that, it's fine.
So I want to take a little walk down memory lane with you, Vince. And let's start with, you know, take us back to the beginning. What inspired you to start this radio station?
Well, first of all, I got to give 100% of the, or 99% of the credit for the start of it to a man named Franz Alina, who was a broadcaster in Long Island and who was looking at this market and noticed that there was an FM station that was on the air, but it was very fledging and underdeveloped. It was licensed for 50,000 watts, but it was only running a few thousand watts, and it's, it just didn't have a big signal. And they were nice people, but they just it just wasn't thinking big time. So he decided to buy the station for, I think, a couple million bucks, most of which was borrowed, so actually for a couple hundred thousand bucks, and it's his own money. And he went around, he very smartly went around the market, and he talked to some advertisers and some advertising agencies. And one of the people that he spoke to at an advertising agency called me up and said, this guy just came in and said he's going to buy a radio station, and he wanted to know who was a good person to pick to run it. And my name came up. And so when I heard that, I was proactive and called him, and we got I think it was about a half hour, 25-minute conversation, and we made the deal and shook hands when I would be the guy to help start it up. And the premise was that the market was underserved. I mean, there was you know, good radio stations existing. WICC AM was a bigger deal then than it is now. But there was just this void in what I considered a very large, lucrative market. They knew that Fairfield County was a special place. It was affluent. It was at a certain composition of demos, and it just was ripe for somebody to reach it all, and it was being underserved right now. I told them I was running WICC at the time, and I told them that it's sort of a tricky thing. I can't be disloyal. I mean, I either work for him and we're part of the team, or I don't, and until I do, I can't do anything. So he said, start now. I resigned from ICC, reluctantly a little bit. And just me and the dining room and a couple of my top advisors, which were my children. And then on my porch showed up a guy named Kurt Hansen, who had been running stuff in New Haven, KCI and Waves, I think, as a programmer. And he said he was available or wanted to make himself available. We talked for, I got to believe, it had to be less than 10 minutes. I said, Kurt, you're the guy. You're what I've been waiting for. This is fabulous. And this is months before we were ready to go on the air. We didn't even have a license yet. So he took a big chance and made himself available. And Franz agreed to pay him a little bit and pay me a little bit, but, you know, it wasn't much.
Yeah.
And then more and more started to come together. There was a fellow that worked at WICC as a national sales manager, Jeff Ketchum. I convinced him to join us when we were ready to go on the air. And that's how it all came together. So it was just not boredom, but just kind of a routine day to day. And all of a sudden, this star appears out of nowhere in the sky. And I thought I'd go try to follow it.
Well, it's funny. I remember talking to recently Dick Ferguson, who at the time owned WEZN. And WEZN was Beautiful Music back then. And WICC was
right.
News Talk, right? And
no, WICC at that time was sort of pop hits.
Oh, okay.
Sort of like NBC in New York and a little bit like, they're trying to be like ABC. There's a big story there, but that's for another time.
Okay.
It's a fun, positive story, yeah.
So I know Dick said to me when he heard that you were creating this station and coming on board, his quote was, oh no, this isn't good. Because he had the market covered at that point, right? And was sitting pretty.
He did. And it was beautiful music and it was a great station, but it had a certain niche. what was missing, and I'll tell you right now how we came up with the format, if I may.
Yeah.
What was missing is what Weeby started on the air sounding like. And it all, the nexus of that was, I had seen a movie called The Big Chill. It was an okay so-so movie. It's like a bunch of yuppies with hangnails complaining about everything. But it was very popular at the time, and I couldn't understand why I liked the movie, because it wasn't that great a movie, but I really dug it. I kept thinking about it. And when I was talking to Kurt, I asked him to go see the movie. I don't remember if he actually ever did or not. But we both realized what the attraction was the soundtrack. Mm-hmm. The movie was playing songs that we all knew, but we didn't hear on the radio. These were the songs that were on LPs that you'd buy and play at a house party or something. And a couple of days later, by coincidence, I went to a neighborhood party, and they were playing Jackson Browne and Bruce and some other stuff. And I thought, wow, wouldn't it be great to hear this on the radio? And then we searched to see if there's any formats like that, and there wasn't. So there was no mold to go. We had to make our own mold, and we did. We sat down and across and talked about hundreds of records. There was a music guy called a guy named Gary Berkowitz, who was a program consultant. And yeah, but at the time he was unknown. He was a good jock at PRO in Providence, and then he was out in the Midwest doing something rather, starting a consulting company. And we talked to him, and he thought it was great, and so we decided to get together, and he would be our consultant. The third thing was that there was another researcher that did music tests. I never heard of a music test, but in a nutshell, it was getting a bunch of people together, hearing a lot of records and rating them as which ones they like and which ones they didn't like. And these were hundreds of people, or not just 5 or 10. And it was very expensive. So these two or three things were creating overhead before we had anything. We didn't even have a radio station. We didn't have a license or anything. But because of Franz and the kind of guy he was, he allowed us to think big. And I looked at Fairfield County as New York, as a major market, as not a little small market.
Right.
So the whole mentality was to, we're going to win the Super Bowl. We're not even have a uniform yet or have a football yet, but we're going to win the Super Bowl.
Right.
That was the mentality of the three or four of us involved in the beginning going in. Maybe 150 call letters, that all started with WW, Wine and Wano and Wink and Wank and Woke and blah, blah, blah. And we came across WEBE, went right past it. And then my daughter, Julia, I forget how old she was at the time, she said, Weeby, 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 Weeby. That was all it took. I heard it two or three times. That was the call letter.
Amazing.
Because the 107.9 was, people were, FM was happening, but it wasn't the format for many people yet. It wasn't the method most people listen to AM. So I didn't want to go in the air and go 107.9. I just wanted to round it off to 108. So Weeby 108.
Right.
Started in the dining room, and it all started to come together.
From the dining room in Westport.
And all of a sudden, we got a license, and we had our call letters, and we had everything except the staff.
Yeah. So just one question. So I've always wondered, the smokestack was genius. Nobody thought that the signal could be anything big because you really couldn't build a tower anywhere. And the solution was staring everyone in the face, but no one thought of the smokestack. 50,000 watts with enormous signal intensity. Whose idea was this?
Well, the story on the smokestack was that, before I got to the smokestack, I had shook hands with Frank D'Addario, who owned a tower, as you're very familiar. And it was important for us to get on the top of the tower. It was only a difference of a few feet between us and EZN, but we wanted to be on top of it psychologically.
Right.
And it went on and on and on. And Franz was getting very impatient. He said, the deadline's coming. We got to get going. And he said, some guy had showed up, an engineer, and knocked on his door and said he wanted $125,000 in cash. Of course, it's a cash. To tell him where we could put our antenna. And it was all the engineering was all done. And it would be fine. It would be legal, blah, blah, blah. And we thought, okay, we'll get back to you. And then we spent like 2 days, 24 hours a day in our car trying to figure out where the hell is this guy talking about? And we couldn't see anything to go to your point. So we finally said, fine, a deal's a deal. We paid him the money. He told us to go to smokestack, and everybody said, oh, no. And it couldn't be done and blah, blah, blah. And we thought, well, in for a penny, in for a pound. Let's give it a shot. So it was literally a gamble. I mean, it was an educated guess, but it was a guess. And to make it more fun, just think in terms of Reynolds wrap, tinfoil. We put metal screening on the side of the smokestack and then put the antenna on that. So it was like a reflector, even boosting to 50,000 watts. In reality, it was more powerful than that, but legally it was 50,000. So that was a big help, because then you could hear us from New York to New Haven.
It was huge.
So the answer to your question is that somebody else other than us had discovered
figured
it,
it
and
out.
Engineered it and sold us the idea.
Well, you were smart enough to act on it. March 1st, 1984, the station goes on the air. Tell me who's on the team. So Kurt and Jeff are your two partners. Who's the first air staff?
Storman was there. Storman Norman was there.
Yeah.
You know, I remember Fitz was there.
Right.
He was a very good character. Along the way, we had an intern named Lone John.
Yeah.
And John Nolan. And John went on the air, and we said, this guy is pretty darn good. So people just, some were professional with a good history, and some were just starting out. Danny came along.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly how much time before he joined us. And then we got Peter Bush. I don't remember if Bush was on day one or
he
not.
Was. I don't believe he was there from day one.
I can see in my mind. I can visualize the people, but I'm just.
Yeah, it's right a now. Long time ago. There were a few owners. So it starts with Franz, and then Marty
the first
Pompadour.
Owner was Franz Dahlen. He owned it for two or three years. And then I got a call one day, or I picked up a call that came in from one of our FCC attorneys, and he said, hey, Vince, are you part of this deal? And I said, what deal? And he went, oh, God, because he didn't know that it was a secret. And he was in negotiation to sell it, and Jeff and I went nuts, and we went to him, right to Franz right away, and said, look, we want to buy it. We'll do an LBO, blah, blah, blah. And he said, nah, the investors want their money. They waited long enough. Well, we looked at each other. Long enough was a little over 2 years.
Right.
That didn't seem like a lifetime to me. But Franz was able to take a $2 million investment, most of it borrowed money, as I say, and sell it for, I think, $11 or $12 million to Marty Pompadour.
Yep.
Marty was a entrepreneur and a very experienced broadcaster who had his own company at this time. And his partner was Elton Rule, who was the former chairman of ABC Broadcasting. So these are real players. Marty's a player on Wall Street. Elton was a player in the business. They bought it for, I can't remember the number, I think $11 million or something like that.
Sounds about right.
And held it for a long, long time. And Marty was a, God bless him, and well, he still is. I talked to him actually a couple of weeks ago.
Smart guy.
He's doing fine. He's in his late 80s, and he's still sharp as a tack.
Yeah.
His management style was laissez-faire. He's used to being like a chairman type with a bunch of different operating guys reporting to him, and I was just one of many, which was a great advantage because I had a lot of autonomy. And as nice as Franz was, he certainly was in the details, whereas Marty was the opposite of that. He just, do your thing, and let me drop me a note once a month, tell me how you're doing, and once a year we'll get together for lunch or something. And that was my kind of owner.
So then
I had a small part along the way, by the way. Just
right. That was always the sort of rumor that you, along the way, you always had a little piece of it. This is where.
Yeah, well, I just decided that in order to get the kind of gigs that I really wanted, I would acquiesce on income. I would acquiesce on what the salary is going to be competitive. But if I could get something at the back end, that might make it worthwhile. And it's a good incentive. I agree with that for almost anybody anywhere, because it's a good incentive to do your best you can, because there's a little prize for you.
And it certainly worked out. I mean,
so far.
Yeah.
Third owner, of course, is Frank Osborne.
Right.
And
But in between there, there was NASA almost bought it, right?
Oh, yeah. There was the wannabes. Let me think about this. It went directly from Pompadour to Frank, and then Frank was the owner when NASA almost bought it or tried to buy it, but reneged on it. There's a long story there I don't want to talk about.
I remember hearing about it. So Frank buys it in 1999, if I remember correctly, or thereabouts, and then Cumulus, and Frank was a great owner.
We owned it, when I say we, Frank owned it for a really short time, like a couple of years,
less
than three, and on the board, on Frank's company's board of directors, was a board member who was also a representative of a bank. I won't tell you about much more than that, but he was a banker representing some of the money to fund the purchase, which is very common. He was also on the board of Cumulus. So he knew that Cumulus was in an acquisition mode.
Yeah.
He knew what our situation was, which was very successful. And he saw an opportunity to put together a deal, which was brilliant. The deal was that he would take a cash flower like Weeby and ICC, and for X dollars in stock, sell it to Cumulus, and then the owners would receive the stock and had no restrictions. They could cash it in right away, which most of us did. So it was a win-win situation. And then Cumulus owned us, and then I was still the manager. I stayed like a super glue on the chair all the way through. But the Cumulus-Cremona combination was a little bit like oil and water. Different management style, different way of doing business, and there's a lot of war stories there. But
I have my own Cumulus war stories, Vince. I can understand.
I know you do. But neither one of us probably should talk about it on this call. It was time for me to walk. So I just kind of treaded water, and I knew they were going to push me overboard, which they did.
Well, I never really knew why you left. So I was always wondering.
I was fired. That's why I left.
Okay.
But I was not officially fired. It was we eliminated your job, you know, all the same old baloney about
right.
They're worried about lawsuits and all that. And
right.
I was waiting for it, and it was all very professional, and they were worried about a backlash because they had this old man, me, and they, you know, and make sure they didn't replace me with somebody under 40. It was kind of comical in a way. It was an interesting experience. I thought they had a great business model. I didn't think they had the greatest implementers running the company.
Right.
I don't know how they're doing now. They might be doing very well now. They might have good people in there now because it's a different team. But at the time, it was just time for me to leave.
That must have been very emotional, that last. Did you have some time where you knew that it was, you know, did you have?
I had about 2 or 3 months.
Oh, okay.
To keep it a little secret. And I realized, then I thought one day, I said, why am I keeping this a secret?
Right.
This is silly. And I talked to John Pinch, and he said, when the hell are you going to finally announce? You got to get on with it because people are starting to hear the rumors and stuff. And I said, the only way they read and hear any rumors is because you're from you,
right.
Not from me.
Right.
So I said, let's get it done. So we just, I don't know, that afternoon or the next morning or something like that, I just announced that I was resigning.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
Which is technically correct. I mean, you know,
yeah.
No, but didn't fool anybody.
The end.
I was wondering if Dick was going to call me or if I was going to call him, and I guess we just kept wondering about it and never did. So.
I keep in touch with him a lot. We chat often. So go.
Yeah, I like this.
Let's go back towards the beginning. You know, you, Kurt, and Jeff start this magical radio station, and then Jeff passes on, and that must have been a very, very difficult time at the station and for you. And how did you handle that and fill such a void?
Well, I was in some kind of a meeting, a promo meeting or something, and a little, I don't know if you remember, it's a different layout now. I had an office, and behind the office was a conference room.
Mm-hmm.
We designed it. It was great. And somebody came in and said, gave me a little nod that obviously they needed to step aside and hear some news, which is that Jeff had just died. And I thought the world stopped for a half a second. But I gathered the staff that was around, and I told them what happened. And we spontaneously had a prayer circle for a minute. And then I jumped in the car to drive to the scene of where he lived. He died at home. There's a bunch of state cops here, didn't want to let me in, so I said, oh, the hell with it. So I passed the word to management, which at that time included a guy named George Sawson, who thought I was putting him on. It was a very emotional moment when he didn't believe me. And I had to say, you don't make stuff like this up. It's
right.
Not funny, nothing funny about it, you know. But to answer your question, it was very quick when I decided that we should move on and that we should have a sales manager, and a leading candidate was Ann Surface McManus, McManus now being her name, as
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
And I called her up and said, come on over to my house, and she did, and we spoke for a few minutes, and I said, I want you to run sales. It was just that simple. It wasn't some long, drawn-out, deliberate process.
Which was probably necessary, you know, to keep things hard, but necessary.
Well, I mean, management was not... People do it different ways. It could have been a long, drawn-out process, and acting sales manager, and blah, blah, blah. And I just said, let's get it done. Because we didn't even skip a beat. Not to be irreverent in any way, take away from what happened, but just you know, move on. Keep going. Let's
yeah.
go.
So
it was a different vibe. And Jeff was kind of like a conciliar to me. He was,
yeah. That's always what I had heard, that you were really close.
Yeah.
So Ann becomes the sales manager, and At that time, the battle with WEZN is fierce. And some say
WEZN,
that,
as you know, it had changed their format to be very similar to ours. Being fine.
And so
I realize you guys are all together now. So.
Well, that's ironic, isn't it? So some say that, you know, this was one of the biggest AC radio battles in the country. And I would tell
it
people that.
It was. It was the biggest market, but it was the biggest battle, yeah.
Right, and so interesting, right?
And so I think that Weeby did well in that battle because our mindset inside the radio station, which is, as I said, we're going to win. We're big. We're winning now. Just keep doing what you're doing. I wanted to make sure that everybody was happy to go to work every day.
Yeah.
I wasn't always successful, but most of the time, most of the people were. That was the feedback I constantly got.
You inspired a culture where everybody felt like they were the best of the best, right? Like, whether it was a sales department.
We were. Even if we weren't, we were.
Right. Well, you fake it till you make it, and you made it. And
and
part of it was looking the part. And I mean, I always remember the sales team was dressed for success and the on-air product was tight. And I don't think people really realized how much money was spent in Fairfield County on radio. Yes, it was a small market. It almost even didn't even feel like a market. It really was New York City. And if you had that mentality that you really are in New York, you know, that's where the money was to be made. When I would tell people that the amount of money that was spent on radio in Fairfield County back then, I think they thought I was making it up, right? And I think that was probably
I understand. Yep, you're absolutely right. And it is the mindset. I wanted to, this is a major market.
Right.
Think like a major market.
Right.
Think, you know, it's just part of a bigger market. But, and it turned out that it was hard to always sometimes to sell ownership on the kind of money that I was spending. A lot of people thought I ran it too fat. But I thought if we got the best jingles and the best promotion and the best blah, blah, blah that we can get, it'll work out. And it did. You know, we were throwing the broadcast cash flow was over 50%.
Yeah, it's incredible.
If people don't know what that is, that means at the end of the day, you had 50 cents for every dollar you made.
Unheard of in the radio business, that's for sure.
There's some successful stations in the high 40s, low 50s, but not many, and not in markets like this.
Right.
Before I forget, this is out of the blue and totally out of the blue.
Yeah.
One of the people I want to give a shout out to, I don't know any idea where she is or what her status is Debbie Reynolds.
Yeah.
Overnights. Part of the mindset we started talking about, that Sunday night was just as important as Monday morning in my mind.
Right.
There was no non-important shifts. Every shift, every break, every song, every spot was important, every single thing. And I think that's what made the difference. It kind of permeated through the staff. I mean, when Val and Bonnie did continuity and did traffic, I remember having an argument one day with someone because I used to run one car per stop set. And the person said, well, that's impossible. We have too many cars. You got to run them back to back. Television does it. And I finally caved, but it took me 2 years before I would acquiesce to do that. You know, quality control was really important.
Shout out to Bonnie and Val, who are still doing the traffic.
I know that.
I love it. They're the best.
Well, they're going to get it right one of these days.
So when you look back, is there anything that you would have done differently? Have you thought about that?
No, not really. And not to be arrogant, I haven't really thought about it because B, I really wasn't unsatisfied with, I mean, I guess if you really push and you said you have to come up with something. Yes, I made one or two personnel mistakes because I didn't stick to my guns. My gut feeling was negative on one of the air talent that was promoted heavily by the consultant, promoted heavily by Kurt, and it all seemed, and it wasn't Jack Carter. I'm not talking about him.
Okay.
It was somebody else, and they're nice people. But the guy belonged on ICC in Morning Drive. If the market was gone, he would have been perfect.
Right.
But on Weeby, he just was a fish out of water, and it wasn't his fault. He had his own. It's like Milton Berle doing a sophisticated, upscale show. It just didn't work. So, but I acquiesced, and I shouldn't have done that. I should have stuck to my guns and had a temper tantrum and said, "We're not going to do that."
But that's minor.
Along the way, decision that was probably ill-advised. But that's all. It's a couple of small things.
Right, and it's imagine. That's incredible.
And even Dr. Chris. I mean, Dr. Chris was a legend in New Haven, and him and Jose were a great act, great. And it was like unfair to both the station and to him to pull him out of that act and then put a straitjacket on him, say, you got to do the Weeby mode, because he was not the right guy to do that.
Right.
It took away the basic part of his shtick. So I feel a little bad about that, but it was okay. It just couldn't as great as it could have been under different circumstances.
One of the last questions I have is, can you share maybe a memorable moment or milestone that stands out to you? So many successes.
Million Dollar May.
Tell me about it.
I remember when we first started out, we had there was zero billing on this book, so we bought this little radio station. Zero.
Right.
Except for one account, which was $5,000, which was a lot of money for a station that has no billing.
Right.
And it was Crazy Eddie. And for those that don't know who or what that is, he was an appliance guy that had commercials everywhere, and they were very loud and obnoxious. On purpose, very effective commercials, and it was Crazy Eddie's prices are insane. And that was the shtick. But it didn't fit my... So I called up Harry Way, who was the head manager for Crazy Eddie, and I said, it's Vince Cremona, how are you doing, blah, blah, blah. We have to cancel our association. He said, what, are you nuts? I said, yeah, I am, but we're going to cancel it unless we can change your spot. We don't change our spot for anybody. Well, 2 years later, they said, Vince, we got a new spot just for you and for this classical station in New York, which made me laugh.
It's like such a great story.
It went to the mentality that, you know.
We're different. Weeby's different.
When Kurt said, tell me about the vision of the radio station, or whatever words he used, and somebody else asked me that question, I said, it's simple. We have a young female, either a yuppie or a young mother. She's in her 30s. She has a green Volvo station wagon with Vermont plates on it. She shops at the Darien Sports Shop. She has Brie and Chablis with the women once in a while at the golf club. You hear the vision you're setting up? It didn't matter what reality was. That was what we wanted to say was the person we were playing fun music for. I think it was not that far off the mark for some of the towns in Fairfield County. That was how we set the stage.
And to this day, we still try and think of that listener in mind when we're programming Weeby. It's an incredible honor to be the general manager of that station. And I always have you in the back of my mind and all of the details.
Must be crowded back there.
Everybody gets along. It's amazing. You know, funny little story. In 2019, well, actually, when Jeff Warshaw, Connoisseur Media, bought Cox, which was WEZN and Star. That's where I was working at the time. I had never met him.
Right.
And he said to me, I think it was 2012, he said to me, I'm going to buy Weeby. And I laughed at him. I thought, well, how are you ever going to be able to figure this out? And in 2019, he did. And I thought long and hard, how do we bring these two radio stations together under one roof? And I thought about all the battles and all of the energy that went into those two radio stations. I thought about the studio that I had empty was a window looking into Star. And I thought, well, I can't do that. I priced out putting a wall up, and I thought about all different things that I could do. And then I said, what if I do nothing and just let it be? And to this day...
Sometimes that's the best solution. Yeah.
So the morning show of Star, which is currently... Anna and Raven and Norm, Storm and Norman, we brought him back in 2019. Every morning, they greet each other and they're the best of friends. And it makes me so happy to see how it all ended in a way. Or it's not over yet, but...
it's like the Yankees bought the Mets.
Yeah, exactly. We have this reunion coming up in a few days, and you wrote a note that I'm going to read since you can't be there.
Wonderful.
So I'm going to read the note, and we're going to play this at the party. But I thought for anybody that's listening that can't be there, they might like to hear it. It was a magic time. I was very lucky to be a part of it. Sorry I'm not with you in person tonight, but you are all in my heart. Thanks to Franz, frugal to a fault, except when it mattered. Equipment, research, promotion, and personnel. His vision and willingness to take a chance on me and allow me the freedom to hire Kurt and Jeff was appreciated. His gamble to defy the naysayers by slapping an antenna on the smokestack was legendary. We broke old molds by, I think, being the first in the country, but I never really got the answer to that question, to present a new format. We played songs people bought to play at home and at their own parties to dance to with friends. Music not heard much or at all on radio back then. We had an adult sound, no yelling, a limited amount of classy spots. We canceled a contract inherited by Crazy Eddie because I thought it was too abrasive. Years later, they broke set and customized one just for us in WQXR. We opened with a tight rate card, no ratings, fabulous air talent, and rapidly rose from worst to first. We took a chance on music format consultant as among his first clients. We obsessed over every detail, traffic, engineering, music research, collections, and spent a fortune in promotion and won the day. Sales did a fantastic job generating funds to keep us going. It was happening. Success fueled more success. It was magic. A New York station quickly copied our format, and then it sped like wildfire across the country. So here's to the original Weebies. You have a lot to be proud of, as do the current pros. I raise my glass to all of you. God bless. Well said, Vince. It really was magic. So is there anything else you want to say to the crowd of people at our reunion on Wednesday? And we're so sorry you can't be there.
And the beat goes on. Enjoy the night.
Thank you for building this for us. We're having a lot of fun today. Like I said, it's an honor to be here and chat with you. And, you know, Weeby 108 is a station that goes down in history.
Well, thanks a lot for the call, and I appreciate your good words. And I hope you all success for the next 40 years.
Love it. Ciao. Amen. Thank you, Vince.